In some ways, axiomatic in America that innovation comes from the private sector, from entrepreneurialism, not from the government. And clearly, we've seen some examples where that's not true. We also see that, for example, in DARPA, you know, which has really essentially been a midwife of the information technology revolution. So that's sort of the first comment, and then I'll have a second one and then sort of look at your comments. The second question is, for things that have no market, for example, national defense or pure scientific research, whether, for example, exploring what Pluto looks like, it's obvious that there's a public sector role because there's simply no profit motive. But a lot of aviation is a big industry. And so it raises the question of, while this is very valuable research, to what extent should this be either done by the Air Force because it's military related, or by Boeing and General Electric because it's industry related? Thinking about those two things, about, you know, private sector versus public sector, what insights do you have based on the NACA and now NASA Aeronautics experience?
All right. So the privatization of space, it sounds like. He wants to know. What do you want to know about?
Well, it's a really good question, and it's one that, if you look back at the history of the NACA and even during NASA history more recently, you see that there are different incentives at different times and the lines blur. So you do have to kind of keep an eye on what's the proper role, where's the proper place for this thing to be. You know, the NACA did a lot of fundamental research that laid the groundwork for things, but private companies were doing that as well, Matt. So it was always a mix. And I think there's a proper role for each of those, and you're always constantly having to keep an eye on, are we in our proper lane here, and is this something that we should spin off to the private sector? Like, for example, sending humans to low Earth orbit. You know, we've been sending humans to low Earth orbit for 50 years. Yeah, it's still rocket science, and it isn't easy, but we've got a pretty good idea on how to do it. Maybe that's something we turn over to the private sector, and that's one of the things NASA's doing these days.
And, so, of course, a lot of those guys have come from right here at EAA, so it's kind of cool.
Absolutely.
We have time for one more question before we bring out our next set of speakers. Do we have one? Anyone? I see somebody standing up there, but he looks like he's going to the bathroom, so good luck. Anybody else? Any last-minute questions? Okay. Guys, thank you so much for being here. 100 years
Thanks,
of history
Pat.
From right here at NASA. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming out. And David DeFelice. Isn't that awesome? Where else are you going to get NASA other than Theater in the Woods for two nights? I hope you were here last night. We had a great time then as well. Tomorrow night, it's Skunk Works. Any Skunk Works fans in the crowd out here? We don't know what they're going to talk about. They may not tell us anything tomorrow, but we'll see. We have time for one more question before we bring out our next set of speakers. Do we have one? Anyone? I see somebody standing up there, but he looks like he's going to the bathroom. So good luck. Anybody else? Any last-minute questions? Okay. Guys, thank you so much for being here. 100 years of
Thanks,
history
Pat.
From right here at NASA. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming out. And David DeFelice. Isn't that awesome? Where else are you going to get NASA other than Theater in the Woods for two nights? I hope you were here last night. We had a great time then as well. Tomorrow night, it's Skunk Works. Any Skunk Works fans in the crowd out here? We don't know what they're going to talk about. They may not tell us anything tomorrow, but we'll see. Coming out here, this is going to be a lot of fun. The Orion program. We're talking about the next generation, really. The Orion program, NASA's next program, a spacecraft currently being designed and built and tested to take humans to Mars and bring them safely home. If Paul Poberesny could be here tonight, going to Mars. First, we have Mr. Larry Price. Larry's right back here. Larry is the Orion Deputy Program Manager at Lockheed Martin, and it's in this position that Larry's responsible for leading a team of about 1,000 Lockheed Martin engineers, designers, building, and testing the spacecraft. Please welcome Mr. Larry. Here he's right over here, Larry Price. And finally...
you going to make this work, or is it going to go?
Finally tonight, Susan Baggerman, NASA's Health and Medical Technology Authority to the Orion program. Susan works with the Orion program to ensure that the implementation of health and medical standards all go according to plan and coordinates to work with humans and health performance-related issues throughout the program. A little different than a third-class medical for a private pilot, right? Sending someone to Mars. And we're going to hear about that tonight. A big round of applause for our Orion folks as we turn the rest of the show over to them, and we'll have a Q&A afterwards. Remember, don't run off. You can have a bus till 11:30, so let's listen in.
All right. Thank you very much. Jennifer's going to try to get the video going. So you saw some of what NASA's doing already. And last night, I hope all of you were here to see what Apollo 13 what the great NASA guys did on Apollo 13. And my only disappointment there was they didn't say what the next steps were. So we're going to talk to you about what's coming up next. A frustrating sort of comment is that in the history of space, about 60 years, 600 people have gone into space, but only about two dozen have gone beyond the space station orbit and low Earth orbit. The Apollo astronauts are the only ones that have gone that far. So now with the path going forward, what we're going to do, what NASA's doing, is building a machine to be able to go follow the instruments, the rovers and the landers at Mars, go to asteroids, neutral gravity points, and start exploring the solar system. So the Orion program is extremely exciting because it's taking that next big step, and it's a tremendous collaboration between the government and industry. We have contracts in 47 states, and with the SLS program, the big vehicle that's going to get us into these long distances, it's a great teaming collaboration. And what I want to show you first is a video, 5-minute video of our flight in December. I think we've touched on it a few times before. And what was so exciting about this is it's a 60,000-pound spacecraft. It is the spacecraft that we're going to be flying to Mars, to the moon and asteroids first. It didn't have all of the equipment in it for crew control, displays, couches and things, but it had all the tough stuff on board, how the computers would work, how the heat shield would work, fly into the atmosphere. We went up to almost 4,000 miles and came in at 20,000 miles an hour. That's like almost the speed of a return from the moon, which allowed us to test the guidance system and navigation and operate the computers outside of the Van Allen radiation belts. So we had about 100 pyrotechnic events. With any rocket event, you have to separate mass to get to the final orbit that you're going to. So what you'll see here is a lot of noise at the beginning, and then it'll quiet down a little bit later. And then I'll point out some of the events that are happening. But what's fun about this is we get fairings that are deploying on the way up. We get the launch abort system that separates that we use if there was a problem with the launch vehicle. And then on orbit, you can see out the windows of the spacecraft. And in the spacecraft, we had microphones. So this is the recording of the noise that was inside the spacecraft. You can see the proton effects upsetting the photography. The camera focal plane, but the computers were running through all of that proton event. Well, it's hard to really see anybody, you know? And then coming in, you come in at 20,000 miles an hour. The heat shield got to 4,000 degrees, so molten lava is 2. So an inch on the other side of that heat shield was 72 degrees. Flew in beautifully. We had helicopters. You'll see some pictures in the imagery on the right that helicopters off of the recovery ship picked us up at 60,000 feet. Going 20,000 miles an hour and imaged us all the way down to the surface. Really cool. So in the microphones, you can hear the pyrotechnic events. You can see the thruster firing in the plumes and hear the rocket engines firing that do the orbit adjustment. We came into the atmosphere. Our FAA license was a 10-mile radius. We entered the atmosphere within 1,000 feet of the target, and we landed within a mile and a half of our entry point. So can we run the video?
Launch enabled, GE main power off.
Fighters have been lit.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Orion and Delta 4 now. I'm sending the speed of sound. 1 minute, 31 seconds left. And we've had partial thrust command. Forward and starboard should be toggling down to the partial thrust mode. Standing by for main engine cutoff. We have
so you burn the fuel out of the strap-ons first, and then the core burns a little bit longer, and it transitions the load a little more smoothly during the booster stage.
5 minutes, 20 seconds in.
Now the fairings will go, and then the launch abort system will be jettisoned right after that.
Core chamber pressure beginning to go down, as expected, standing by for MECO.
Uh-oh.
We have MECO, the main engine has cut off. Standing by for stage separation. Each have stage separation. EDS is deploying. The nozzle has been extending. Standing by for igniter spark.
Go ahead, VSC.
Yeah. And we have igniter spark, and we have ignition. Ignition on the second stage.
So you can see the first stage core falling off behind it, and second stage is burning down.
On the second stage. 6 minutes, 2 seconds into the flight.
And fighter, we also had
the Orion's events for the number of modules there.
Jettison
and the board system jettison.
Those fairings weigh 1,000 pounds apiece, carbon fiber. And then it'll turn around and show the system. And so those noises are actually recorded from the microphones that are inside the spacecraft. Now the next shot will be up at, so we go. We went into two orbits so we could get the vehicle stabilized and then go to the high orbit. This is a view out of the windows of the spacecraft at 4,000 statute miles. Then after we went through the high altitude, we separated the spacecraft. So this is a view from inside the second stage. Now this camera shot is really cool, and it's on YouTube as Astronaut's View. We're coming in at 20,000 miles an hour, and it's the plasma forming behind the spacecraft. And I think this has only been imaged early in the Apollo program from the guys at Textron that were doing the heat shield. So on the right hand, on the left hand side are the altitude, velocity, and bank angle, and on the third one down you can see the G level. The G level was really high. The GNNC guys drove it down into the atmosphere as fast as we could to stress the heat shield. So you can hear some thumping, and that's the RCS firings. And you can see the plasma change shape, and that's when the jets fired the vehicle. It's like a glider. You can see in the inset, I guess you could, the vehicle dropping through. It was picked up by an RV from the Armstrong Flight Center in California. So on the upper screen, you can see it. That's about 60,000 feet out of the helicopter.
Jettison in 5. 3 good shoots.
They cover, we had to get off so you could expose the parachutes. And then the drogue chutes come out. We're going about 300 miles an hour, and we've got to slow down the vehicle without ripping the chutes all apart.
There's drogue cut.
Both drogues released, fine.
So the woman's voice is in the helicopter. The bangs are the cannons and the cutters that cut the parachute reef lines away.
We're back in space business now.
Oh, yeah. This is awesome.
Engineers get a little excited when this stuff's going on.
Just say it over the radio, or say it over the ICS when it splashes. You'll be the first to see.
Down right now.
192922.
We have splash down 1629.
So at the end, that last noise is a guillotine that cuts the cables so that the parachutes don't drag you across the water. And that's the end of the flight. So all of that, if you listen to them all, you can hear all of the 100 pyrotechnic events. It had to work perfectly for us to fly the mission. So it's very exciting to be able to do. Thank you. That's about 3,000 people that made that happen. 3 years of building the spacecraft, 1 million lines of software code, hours and hours of testing, putting 250,000 pieces together, checking them all out. When we launched, we had almost every control center in the existence. Air Force, the Delta Commercial Launch Center, engineering centers in Denver, Mission Control, where Houston, we have a problem in Houston, two centers in California to make sure we knew everything that was happening and we could respond to it quickly. We had the entire mission 4.5 hours. The crew could get up in the morning, run the mission, fly through the mission, and then land in recovery off the West Coast. So really exciting to see that we had gotten this significant step. So now we're building the next vehicles to go, to be able to go into deep space. Do I just? And then there's another little snippet of the launch because, you know, we love fire and smoke.
Go. Fido. Go. Guidance. Go. LSO. Go. Weather. Go.
These one. Countdowns are always really, you know, they go. Put your heart in your throat when everybody's calling the go. The first day we kept having either boats in the way or the weather was, the winds were too strong or the valves froze. So we flew on the second day.
Upper stage LH2 secure at flight level.
We had 20,000 people in the viewing area.
Go, Ryan.